This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm 36. I live with my husband, two daughters, and our dog. For many, many years, I got into a habit of drinking 2 to 3, but usually 3, large glasses of wine every night once my kids were in bed. Everyone I fessed up to said it was fine, but a niggly feeling in me just knew it wasn't. One day I impulsively said, right, that's it, no more. And I went on a search for different resources to help me. I came across OTI and I immediately loved it because suddenly this dramatic lifestyle change that I had embarked on wasn't about boring restriction. It was about enjoying life and discovering loads of really cool things. I signed up to become an OTI member, and that is great because you have access to a whole load of supportive people on the forum. You can log on to Zoom meetups, which happen daily, so you never feel alone. And we get to listen to a whole other episode every week, which is the premium pod. So a huge thank you to the OTI team for everything. The last 6 months have been awesome.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence, the world's fastest growing alcohol-free podcast. We have got a treat for you today. First things first, let's give you a reminder of who we are. My name is Freddie. I stopped drinking over 2.5 years ago when I was sick and tired of looking in the mirror and seeing a very stressed, very depressed, very unhappy, very unfit and overweight person. When I stopped drinking after 1,000 failures, I got my life back on track and I never looked back. And I'm so happy to introduce this next episode of Over the Influence. But I'm not doing this on my own. I've got Mr. Background, Ben, who is now in the foreground.
Hello, you're not Sharon. You're not Sharon Hartley. 47 years old, from Lancashire, married with three children.
I wish I was, Ben. I wish I was.
Hello, I'm Ben. I'm the producer of this podcast. I'm a year alcohol-free. I love alcohol-free life. It suits me. It's something I'm going to keep on going with because basically every single area of my life has improved since ditching booze. Sharon isn't here because she's on her holidays. She's in a camper van.
She is.
Somewhere in... Is it the Outer Hebrides she's gone to, Freddie?
I think so. I think she's tried to get as far away from us as possible.
Yeah, and she's done a bloody good job of it. Although, apparently, she's been basically in a camper van that isn't very big with family members, and it's been absolutely hammering it down with rain for the last few days. So I'm not sure how much she's enjoying it at the moment. I know that she'd probably rather be here. In fact, before we launch in and introduce our guest, Freddie, shall I read out the message that Shaz put in our WhatsApp group earlier on? Please, please, please say hi to Abby. Her reels and her confessions make me laugh daily. She's right up our street. Honest and hilarious. It was a confession about puke that caught my eye. And from that point forward, I knew she'd be our friends. Abby Felton, welcome to Over the Influence.
Hi. Thank you. Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I'm fabulous. Yeah. Yeah. How are you both?
We're really good, Abby. I think you've got a really important role. And I was thinking about this morning. You know what it's like when you're growing up and your mum goes on holiday for the first time and she says, right, I think you're big enough now to stay in the house on your own for a little bit, but I've got a babysitter in just to keep an eye on you. And I think basically that's part of the reason you're here, Abby, to keep a sensible eye on me and Ben while Shatter's away.
I'm the babysitter. But I'm so childish and very immature.
Oh, no.
I'm the bad influence. I'll lead you two astray.
Abby, it's so good to have you here. I think the term influencer is banded around willy-nilly these days. But I think it's often given to people who are having the wrong kind of influence. But I'm really excited to have you here today because I think you are a true sober influencer, but also so much more. You know, you're a sober blogger, you're an Instagram star, you're a TikTok star. what I love about your posts is that they take a totally different approach on alcohol. And in my opinion, I think you inspire people to not only drink differently, but also to think differently. You can almost tell like I've prepared this in advance. And I was going to start off by just saying, for people that aren't aware of you and who haven't seen you on Instagram and everywhere else yet, what's your story? How did you get to this stage with your drinking journey?
Well, I've been drinking and abusing drugs since I was a teenager, since I was about 14. But like the last 10 years of my life, I basically 10 years ago, basically packed a backpack full of stuff, and I was living in London. I said goodbye to London. And then I just spent the last decade travelling around the world, partying around the world, drinking and drugging, which was fun for a while until I realised that I was deeply, deeply depressed. I was very, very sad and I was in a very, very, very dark place. And yeah, just after a few traumatic events, just one after the other, you know, they always say that like you reach rock bottom. I just kept on doing it. Like, my mind just wouldn't change about drinking and drugging. Like, I always knew that was my problem, but like rock bottom after rock bottom, I was just like, I'm gonna keep on doing this. this is fine. This is great. And then, yeah, it was at the beginning of the pandemic when kind of everyone abroad, but like a lot of people who had been backpacking kind of like went home. So I was in Canada at the time. I just lost my job because I was blackout drunk at work. The pandemic hit, and then I went home back to the UK and then stayed at my mum's house, and kind of, I think the pandemic was like a catalyst of change for a lot of people. And for me, it kind of made me take a long look at my life, a hard look at my life, and just kind of look in the mirror and just think, right, if things keep on going this way, I'm going to die. Like, I'm either going to die of alcohol or drugs, I'm going to overdose, or I'm just going to kill myself. This can't go on. So I made a decision that I did want to live and I did want to be happy. And I knew that the one thing in my life that was stopping me from doing that, well, not the one thing, there's many, many aspects of my life that was stopping me from being happy, but the main factor was alcohol.
When you say that you were blackout drunk at work, you drunk a bottle of vodka, am I right in thinking, at work?
I did, Ben. Yeah. And it was a great, fantastic idea.
What was happening at the time? Like, how did you end up drinking a bottle of vodka at work?
Well, so I was working in this barbecue restaurant. I absolutely hate my job. So basically, like, I'd moved to this was in Canada, and I'd moved to Vancouver Island, because I was living in Ottawa before, and in Ottawa I started smoking crack and things just got like really out of hand and I was in a really dark place. So I did a geographical. I went, right, I'm going to move to Vancouver Island and everything's going to change. Like, I'm going to, like, the crack will be out of my life. I'll be in a different environment so I can be happy. And obviously, like, that didn't happen. Like, I just moved to Vancouver Island and was like still just as depressed and still in such a dark place. Like, nothing changed mentally. I was like completely kidding myself. And then I started working, I didn't really like where I was living. I was working in a barbecue restaurant. I didn't like the job. It was like low season at the time. So the restaurant wasn't very busy. And so a lot of the time it was just me in there, me, an alcoholic, and a bar full of spirits and like zero customers. So like for like maybe like 3 months, I was getting pissed on the job. Like, I was just filling my cup up with vodka and just like drinking it like under the till, and it was fine. Well, it wasn't fine, but I was getting away with it. And then one night I just took it too far and I drank like a whole bottle of vodka because I just didn't care. I didn't care about my job. I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about my reputation or how I treated people or treated someone else's business. Yeah, so I got blackout drunk, and that like the night is like really, really sketchy in my mind, like my memories. But I do remember kind of being slumped behind a wall, like against a wall, and my boss coming in and like looking really panicked. And I remember him sitting me down on a chair, and I remember him like kind of like hovering above me, and it was like being told off by your mum. And then the next day, like the next morning, I woke up and I was in my uniform still, like in my bed. Can't remember how I got there, but I got a text message on my phone, and he said, like, for my boss saying like you need to come in. So I went in for a meeting, And then he was like, I think you've got an issue with alcohol. And I was like, yeah, I think you're definitely right. And then after that meeting, I went and got drunk. So,
was he the first person that kind of highlighted it to you? He kind of said it so directly to you?
Yeah, no. I have had an intervention once before, but that kind of went in one ear and out the other. A lot of like my friends are also like big partiers, and like I've like traveling around the world and like backpacking like nonstop. I was very much in an environment where just drinking, that party lifestyle, was just it was just normal.
And do you feel, Abby, and one thing I'm really interested in is that concept of, you know, because I've done it in the past, my friends have done it in the past, where you said, right, you know, I need to change something in my life, effectively running away from your problems as such. And I'm always minded to a story one of my friends said, where, you know, they said, right, we're going to quit drugs for a while, we're going to go somewhere else, we're going to change our place, change our habits, change our friendship group, and they go somewhere else, and for some reason, you know, the drug dealer sort of weaves their way through the crowd and lands right on their doorstep and says, hey, do you want some drugs? And something like that. Do you think that's the case, where if you try and really run away from your problems, they do still keep following you?
Absolutely, 100%. Like, especially when it comes to mental health, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, who you're with, like, the thing that's influencing your mental health is yourself. Like, you need to make peace with yourself before you can get better. And it doesn't matter where you are. And then also, like, chaos attracts chaos. When I was in Canada and I started smoking crack of all things, right, I moved to Ottawa because I was living with my boyfriend in New York, and I was such an alcoholic and I was making his life miserable that he kicked me out and banished me to Canada. So I went to Canada, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to start this new life in Canada. The first person I meet is like a guy with a crack addiction. Like, I was like this, ball of chaos, who was just clearly, obviously depressed and just masking her feelings with drugs and alcohol. So, like, the first thing that I attract is someone else who's doing the exact same thing.
It's crazy, isn't it? The way that, like, yeah, that different energy does attract different energy. And I don't want to get too kind of, like, new age with it all. But I do believe that when we're in these situations when we're feeling quite chaotic, that's when chaotic people do tend to come in our lives and try and add to that chaos and not take it away.
Absolutely. Especially like if I'm going around being a depressed alcoholic, like I'm hardly gonna attract like stable, like peaceful people into my life, because they see me like running amok and they're like, whoa, I don't want that in my nice peaceful life. And like, yeah, like, of course.
Was this was the boyfriend in New York the boyfriend that you describe as the relationship that you treasured? Is that the there's a quote that's really I keep coming back to in my brain ever since I read it, which was, a relationship I treasured ended because I was a toxic person. And that's a really strong thing to say, like, in terms of kind of self-reflection. That's first of all a really big thing to say. That must be a difficult thing to realize.
It is like, it was a difficult thing to admit. And this all came up in like in the last like 15 almost 16 months of sobriety. I've done a lot of inner work and I've looked like deep within myself and kind of asked myself why I was abusing drugs and alcohol, and like, do I like this person? Like, who do I want to be? Did a lot of inner work, and I kind of looked back on my life and all the terrible things that I've done. And in that relationship, even though like I absolutely treasured him and it was such an important relationship in my life, but like I admitted to myself, I was like, it was me. Like, I was the toxic person. Like, I was the one causing the problems because I was drunk all the time. And like, so we met abroad, and he's from New York. So when we met, he invited me to go live with him in his house. So I moved in with him, and then all of a sudden, immediately, I started drinking. Like, immediately, like when he was at work and I was alone, I didn't have a support network there. I didn't have a car, and I was still like depressed. And yeah, so I just started drinking, and I was just a dreadful person to be emotionally invested in. Like, him as my boyfriend, he'd come from home from work and I was drunk, shouting at him, like just yelling at him, and he had to deal with that, like. And I did have to, like, admit to myself, yeah, I was a really toxic person. I did this. It was me who'd done this. And then I kind of had to forgive myself. And then only after I forgave myself was that was when I was able to let go.
I think that's really interesting, Abby, because I know one of the main questions we get from you know, listeners, from members in our group, especially people early on in their alcohol-free journey, and I certainly feel this as well, because I've done some terrible, terrible things when I've been drunk in the past. And how do you forgive yourself? And you know, a lot of people say that they, you know, they can't get over those drunken mistakes. They're thinking back to that, you know, that time they were drunk at work, or when they hurt someone, or when they did something really bad. And how you've obviously found that peace and that forgiveness, because you know, you talk about it on your Instagram, you talk about it very openly now, but how did you move on and basically just let all that shit go?
I had to be very, very honest with myself, like really brutally honest. Like through this journey, I've spoken to myself like I would speak to my best friend. I would want my best friend to be honest with me, tell me the truth, so I can move forward. And so I've just been brutally honest with myself. It's been like, right, you've done this, this, and this. It was shit. Take that lesson. Don't do it again. And then, yeah, just genuinely, like, treat myself with kindness and compassion and forgive myself. And then, like, I just look back and remember the state of mind I was in when I was making those choices and I was acting that way. Like, I was a very, very sad person. I was very lost. I was very traumatized. I was just in a very, very dark place. So I just look back and treat myself with kindness and sympathy, because, like, although I am responsible for my own actions, I was very, very depressed, and depressed people do strange things. So I sympathize with myself, and then, yeah, and then forgive and let go. And then only when you let go can you move on. Like, once you've let go of the shame and the guilt, because that's often what holds you back.
I think that's a lot of what sends people back to drinking as well. You know, that you stop drinking, you get hit by this massive wave of shame and guilt. And I remember myself, it felt like every drunken skeleton in my closet was coming back to haunt me in those early weeks. And that's the point when people are like, you know what, fuck this, I'm just gonna have a drink, because that'll make it all feel better. But just in the short term, but as we know, in the long term, it only makes things worse.
Yeah, you've got to live with yourself. Like, especially if you've been like abusing alcohol for so long, like, you forget who you are, you lose all sense of self. And then when you get rid of that barrier, you're like, you have to live with yourself. Like, you have to live in your own head, and you've got to like face up to things, and you've got to listen to your own thoughts. Like, you can't just be like, oh, there's a thought. No, I'm going to drink some vodka. Like, get rid of that thought. Like, you actually have to listen to yourself. And yeah, it is hard. It is very hard.
Abby, I want to talk to you about so many things, but I hope you will forgive me for staying on this point for just a little bit longer, because we've touched on this before in podcast episodes, but I don't think we've talked about it as deeply as we've started to here, with that kind of the shame and the guilt and how that can be a trigger to go back to drinking again. I know that you're not just a kind of advocate for healthier lifestyle in terms of sobriety, in terms of ditching drugs, but also you talk very openly about depression and self-loathing is a phrase that you use too. When you're going through what has obviously been a very healthy process for you, where you've been able to look back, you've been able to examine and think about the things that maybe you didn't do particularly well, and isn't that almost sort of a self-loathing itself, when you like digging up all that stuff? How can you make sure that you keep on the right side, and you stay on the kind of side of sympathy and kindness, and not go over into self-loathing? Because that must be a really blurry line.
It is. It's like I said before, it's like the kind of treating yourself like you would your best friend. Like, right, don't treat yourself like an enemy. Like, don't, like, if you were talking to your enemy, you'd be like, oh, you're an idiot, you're a terrible person, you're a bad person for doing that. Like, speak to yourself and treat yourself like you would your best friend the entire time. Like, I'm sorry you went through that. I can understand why that happened, but you can do better next time. And, like, kind of be your own cheerleader.
Do you think kind of almost visualizing, like, is that part of the process where it's, you're not having this conversation with yourself, you're having this conversation with a version of yourself?
Yeah, because it is your past self, and like, the two people are so different. Like, the person who, the drinking person, is so different to the sober person. Often, like, I think of myself when I was in active addiction, I think of that as my inner child, almost. Like, I have, like, traced back a lot of my addiction issues do come from childhood trauma. And so when I do think back to that person who did do these terrible things, like, I think of that as a girl, as a little girl who's not equipped to live in the world and to engage with the world because she's so traumatized and she's self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. I think of her as a child. It's hard to be mean to a child.
Abby, I was going to ask, and this is always something that, again, I'm interested in, so I tend to ask people. And you mentioned the boss that sat you down and said, you know, you've got a drink problem. You mentioned the intervention that was staged that kind of went in one ear, went out the other. Do you believe that someone is only ready to stop their, you know, drink and drug habits when they're ready? And effectively, I think what I'm trying to say is I've got a bit of a controversial view here that I think someone has to want to change before they change. And it doesn't matter how much time and energy and love friends and family spend on someone, if they're not willing to change, and when they reach that moment, because I was there as well, I had thousands of times people saying you need to quit, thousands of talking to myself, but I failed every time. And do you think that someone has to be, they have to have that light bulb moment themselves and no one else can give it to them?
100%. Like, I completely agree with that. Like, you have to want to get sober to get sober. That's why, like, when people are quite often, very often, in fact, when people are forced to go to rehab, it doesn't work. They get out of rehab and they go and use straight away. Like, to get sober, you have to genuinely have to have an honest desire, because it's not something that you just go, oh, I should be sober now. That's fine. I don't drink anymore. Like, it's hard work. It's a process, and it's like, you have to commit to it. It has to be an honest commitment, a heartfelt commitment to actually do it.
Abby, before we get into kind of where you are now and what you're doing now, can we talk about those early days? So you decided, right, I need a change. How did you find it? Did you have that kind of immediate clarity that some people get? Did you have the headaches and was it awful for a few weeks?
I was fine. I got sober and then it was, yeah, no, joking. I had a terrible time. Like, my first week of sobriety, I had really bad withdrawals. I was at my mum's house and I was in bed for a week. Like, I was bedridden. I was like hallucinating. I had a fever, hot flushes. I was sweating. I was cold. I was like coming in and out of consciousness. Like, it was actually very unsafe. Now when people ask me about, like, withdrawals and stuff, I'm like, please talk to your doctor first, because it's actually really dangerous. It was a really, really shitty week. and then it just carried on being shit. Like, I cried a lot. I mulled over all of my life. I just thought about, like, how shit my life had been and, like, how I'd fucked everything up, and like, just all the shame and guilt came to the surface. Like, it really did. That's when I started forgiving myself, because I did spend the first, like, couple of months. Well, I spent the first couple of months on my ex-boyfriend's Instagram, like, stalking him, because I was just, like, torturing myself. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I've lost you. Yeah, it was crap.
I think that's really important, because, well, not obviously important that it was crap, but that people understand. And I think, again, maybe a lot of what, dare I say, the media or other people out there put out, that, you know, you wake up on that first morning hangover free and, you know, the sun is shining and the birds are singing and the unicorns are prancing across your front lawn. But it's not like that. Like, it can be hard and painful and shitty, and especially if we build up those years and years of those bad habits, we can't just turn off the switch. But Was there a particular moment, you know, we talk about a rock bottom. Was there a, I'm trying to think of the opposite of rock bottom, a mountain top, making that one up.
Soft high. Yeah, that's a really,
yeah. A soft high, yeah, which is probably something more than trying to avoid these days. Yeah. You know, was there a moment when you thought, actually, you know what? This is working for me. I'm starting to get this. Now I'm starting to actually see the benefits of these good habits.
Yeah. Like, I think possibly over last summer, but I got sober pretty much when we went into the first lockdown. Everyone else was like up their drinking, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna be, just to be different, I'm gonna stop drinking altogether. So after the first lockdown, I moved to Greece with my mum. I lived in Greece for a few months, and whilst I was there, this is like the same kind of thing as what we were talking before, like energy attracting energy. When I got to Greece, I met this group of amazing women, this community of women, who were all like so wise. It was like a yoga community, and they were so full of like love and wisdom, and they just really, really, really nurtured me. And then like being in that environment and having open and honest conversations with people, like healthy people. Like before that, I was like hanging out with drug addicts who wanted me to steal stuff. And like, yeah, I was like hanging out with some really unsavory people. I was an unsavory person. But then like I was having healthy relationships with people. I was having like they were bringing value to my life. And I hadn't really had that before, like not for a long time. And that's when I started thinking, like, oh, things are actually starting to look better now. Things are starting to be quite nice.
It sounds like a strange question, but did that feel weird in terms of, again, yeah, speaking to people and thinking, how are you just being nice to me because something's going to happen in the future where you're going to try and sell me drugs, or do you want something from me? And I think what I'm getting at is that a lot of people, when things start to go in the right direction for them, they start to feel like they don't deserve it, or they don't deserve that happiness or something. And did you have any of those questions, or did it all just feel
I just lent into it.
Natural? Yeah.
I lent into it. Like by that point, I was starting to trust myself a little bit more. Trust my intuition and just having a lot more trust in myself. And I just knew, like, this is healthy. This is good for me. Like, this is like, I need to keep doing things like this, like, rather than doing all the bad things for me, rather than, you know, smoking crack, like, I should do the things that are good for me, like yoga and hanging out with really nice women.
If Shazza was here right now, she'd probably say the opposite of addiction is connection. That's one of her favorite phrases. You said
and
earlier
it's so
that
true.
Great, because you said it was a personal, you needed to be ready to make this change. But actually, how important were those other people then? Like, obviously, you know, you said you lent into it, but actually, if you hadn't met that group of amazing women, would you be where you are now? Would it have been it still would have happened, but slower process?
I think I'd still be where I am today. I was still like having that mindset, that peaceful mindset. But it's just being around people who had like this, who had a similar way of looking at the world and engaging with the world. Like, it was encouraging, but I still think that I was already feeling like I was very peaceful.
Hi, we're Sound Rebel, and we produce this podcast.
We make loads of podcasts, and we want to make yours. Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk to find out more.
You forgot the bit about the first free episode.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad, and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Great. Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Right, back to the episode.
What is up, everybody? It's Freddie here, and I am a very happy boy because I've been given my very own section I'm calling it Freddie's Favourite Bits, and this is where we replay some of my favourite moments from the Over the Influence Premium podcast. As a reminder, the Premium podcast is a second secret Over the Influence series, which is exclusively for our members. We release new episodes every single week, so you can get your second dose of Over the Influence just the way you like it. Find out more about membership at overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome, welcome to our premium pod. And this is the bit where it should premium.
Premium.
Pod.
Just for you. Pod. Just for you.
Can you do something professional with that bit, please, at some point, Ben?
Yes. What do you mean? Like, what do you want me to do with that bit?
I don't know. I just want a proper echo on my voice.
Do you want like a kind of like a Radio 2 style jingle, like a premium?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. I'm on it.
Exactly.
In fact, you know what? Through the magic of editing, I can make that happen right now. I'm like Ed Sheeran on stage with his loop pedal. Okay, you ready? Premium.
Really?
I just need to silence for a sec, please. I'm creating at the moment. Sorry. I'm creating, Shaz.
Sorry.
Premium. Now we'll put together. Premium. Ta-da, how was that?
I was just watching you sing. I really enjoyed that.
Amazing.
Freddie's actually speechless.
I'm blown away by that one, definitely.
Right. Anyway.
I do love a good production meeting on air. So, welcome to our slick premium pod. It is wonderful, as always, to have your company.
Look, this is something really special. This is where you matter. This is where, together, we can make this sober rebellion happen. We would love you to join. Check it out, and you too can be getting these premium podcasts coming in your ears every single week. In fact, I think it's time for me to get my very own premium podcast jingle. Check this out. Premium. 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 Background Ben, work your magic. Premium. Right, I think we've all seen enough of Freddie's bits for one week. Now, back to the episode.
Abby, I suppose we've spoken about a lot of things. Thank you for being so honest and so open with us. It's one of the things
always
we love about this podcast. Yeah.
Always. Yeah, I confessed to some terrible things on my Instagram, so.
Like, what was the puke one that Shaz mentioned?
Oh, the puke one. I made this reel about how this one time I was on a date and I was like, I was plastered, obviously, and I puked into my pint glass, and then but my date didn't see, and then to disguise the fact that I'd puked into my drink, I drank the puke just carried on like it was normal.
Oh, Abby.
And I think we made out afterwards at some point.
Yeah.
I know. Wow. I was so gross.
But that's why I think it's so good, because we've all got those stories, and it makes people feel so much better. And I think this is what it ties back to with, you know, the self-loathing and the regret and everything else. Because a lot of people out there right now are thinking, I can't believe I did that thing 10 years ago. There's something wrong with me and I'm a terrible person and no one else would ever do something like that. And then when you have the strength and the courage to put yourself out there and say, you know what, I did this. This is me. And this is the way that things went down. Then other people start to feel better and they think, oh, you know, that's okay, because Abby did that. Then the time when I, you know, drunkenly killed the neighbour's cat or something, which I didn't do, by the way, that first thing that came into my head, you know, don't feel so bad about it now, which is great. And I think it's almost, you know, our mistakes is something that can combine us and bond us. And that's why I think everything that you do is so amazing, because you've got the courage to say, you know what, this is what I've done. What are you going to do with it? And I think that's a huge part of healing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I aim for with my Instagram. I want to destigmatize addiction by being open and humanizing it. A lot of people see addiction as someone's just made a choice that they are going to do a bunch of drugs and hurt everyone they love, like, and they forget about there's actually a human being behind that. Then also to help others not feel so alone. That's why I'm so open about my journey and what I've done. Like, I pretty much am an open book, Yeah, I think, I don't know, there's probably something weird in there. Like, I'm probably like humiliating myself in a way. But yeah, that's one of the reasons why I'm so open about stuff, because people do have a lot of shame. And when I'm open and I'm like, hey, this is like some mad stuff that I've done, people, like, it resonates with other people and they're like, oh, okay, I'm not such a freak, or I'm not completely alone in this. Like, other people feel this way, other people have these thoughts or do these things as well. Yeah, so I just, by being open and honest, like, as well as like having a honest dialogue about addiction, I just aim to unite people and to help people feel less alone.
I think that's awesome, and it's something that really pisses me off, especially in the social media world, when everyone is so trying to be so bloody perfect. And I don't know, I say it loads of times, having your perfect sober sunrise, doing your yoga with your perfect body, and then going to have your perfect diet with your perfect family and everything else. And that makes it so hard for people to relate to, I believe, because it can be tough and tearful and traumatic and guilt-ridden. But someone said to me a long time ago, you know, my mess is my message. And I think the more we can say the messes that we've got ourselves into is our message for the world, that's what really helps people. That's what really can help change behaviours and make people think and help people to think it's okay, rather than just try to be this perfect, bloody, wonderful life all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not realistic. It's not realistic. No. And it's not. And then if people are getting sober and they are expecting to have a perfect life all of a sudden, like to stop drinking and the next day their life's fine, like, well, everything's fixed, you know, like, if they're seeing it, like, influencers on Instagram who do portray like it's a perfect life with no problems, like, when they don't achieve that, when they do like fuck up and they do have problems and they do start hating themselves, you know, they'll be like, oh my god, I'm doing it wrong, like, I must be doing it wrong, I can't do this.
I was going to call it influencers. Yeah, there's so many accounts out there, should we say, that paste an unhealthy picture that just makes us feel shit about ourselves. And I wish something would change in the wider social media world that got more realistic photos and stories and lifestyles out to people. But you're flying the flag for this, obviously, Abby. And I think the more we can do to help share your message and to get a real world view of things out there, then the more people are going to be helped.
What's your plan now? Because obviously your social media presence has rocketed. You know, it's
yeah,
quite
I'm
recent.
Yeah, I'm very popular.
You are very popular. You are. But what have you got any particular plans? Is it just keep doing you?
Just keep on doing what I'm doing. Just keep on making funny reels. Just keep on taking the piss out of myself. Like, it's also how I cope. It's part of my healing process. Like, I do tell people like this on my Instagram. Like, this is also part of my process and part of me getting rid of my shame by kind of putting it out in the open and talking to people about it. It's kind of like my therapy. Yeah, so just like, keep on with my Instagram, really. Like, I don't have any plans with it at all. Like, I just want to keep on making content that resonates with people and that helps people and it's working. Like, I get a lot of messages from like really supportive people. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Do you get a lot of people saying to you, like, you know, asking for help and saying that you're at rock bottom? And yeah, does that whole social media thing that started off as something quite therapeutic and fun and something that you're clearly very talented at, has it got a bit of a dark side, or does it ever feel overwhelming at all?
I've set myself boundaries now. After my second viral video, I got inundated with messages. I was getting like 100 messages a day and I was like, oh, I have to respond to all these people. Like, my goal was to help people and now I'm helping people. I need to like answer every single message, and I got obsessed with it, and it was all I was doing. I was just on my phone like texting people like, oh my god, these people need me. And then I spoke to my friend about it and she was just like, look, you can't answer every call. Like, you can't, like, You can't pour from an empty cup. Like, you can't help people if you're emotionally drained. So I set myself a boundary and now I don't answer all my messages. But I do instead. I do like Sunday Night Lives. So I do like question and answer sessions. So that gives me an opportunity to interact with followers and they can answer questions then. And also I've got like a frequently asked questions part on my page. And that's how I help people and interact with them. But I had to set myself those boundaries. Like otherwise then I would get to the dark side.
It was a bit like that with us, wasn't it, Freddie? And actually, it was one. There's many reasons that we ended up setting up this community over the influence.co.uk if you're interested in meeting like-minded people. But that was one of them, is that it does become a bit over. Like, you suddenly realise that you are spending all your time on your phone. And actually, that's not healthy in a lot of ways. And I think what I love about what we've built now is that it's not all on us. You know, we've got people in the community who are just starting out. We've got people. There's one lady who's 7 years alcohol-free. And it's just really nice that there's now like a, like rather than it being all on, because it's also when you're giving, when people ask you for advice, there's a weight on that, isn't there? You know, you kind of, you really think about your responses and you want to get it right. And you also don't want to, like you said earlier, I always tell people, you know, talk to a doctor before we, you know, you do kind of start to second get like, have I said, is that the right advice I've just given? Da, da, da. Actually, it's so nice now that we can just do it in a forum where people can help each other out, and if one of us isn't around because Freddie's asleep because it's 4 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand or we're doing this or whatever, you know, there's people there. Abby, if people want to find you, where is it? It's abby.feltham, isn't it? ABI.
Yeah, on Instagram, and then Abby Feltham without the dot on TikTok.
We're not going to let you go yet though, Abby, sorry.
That's fine. I could chat all night.
Okay.
I can stay here forever.
This is our first podcast recording that we've ever done with an audience. We've got an audience who are listening in on Zoom and they've been putting some questions in the chat function. Guys watching, if you would like to put a question in the chat function now for Abby, please go for it. We've got one here from Alison. So here's my question. I am still super early days. It's been 9 days since I last drank. My closest friends are the people I partied with, and I'm terrified to hang out with them now because we've been drinking together for 40 years. Any suggestions on how to navigate that? They are great people, and I don't want to just leave the friendship group, but there are some serious ingrained habits attached to them.
I would say, so I was in a similar position. Like, I've the friends that I have, I've had for like 15 years, and although my relationship to alcohol was very different to theirs. We did party together, but the best method that I found is just to be completely open and honest with them. Like have an open conversation about it. Tell them why you've quit drinking, why you don't want to drink anymore, how it's made you feel. And then because they're your friends, they will respect that. And then like people will only know how to best support you if they know everything, if you're completely transparent. If you're honest with them, then they're not going to offer you a drink, or they're not going to encourage you. They're going to support you.
This isn't a question. This is actually a question from me based on a comment. Love the peak story. What a champ has been put in the chat. Can I ask you? I laughed when you said that. Is it funny? What
it's
you do
so
a lot
funny.
Of? Yeah. Okay. Good. Because sometimes you don't quite. Yeah, you don't quite know where to. Because it's obviously, it was at a period of your life where you were really dependent on alcohol and you were overdoing it. But it is still, that's still funny. That's still a funny moment.
It is funny. Like, and that's also like one of the things like my Instagram is all about. It's basically me taking the piss out of what an actual absolute shit show I was. Laughing at your past self is a good way to come to terms with your past behavior. If you can have a sense of humor, see the funny side. That's like a really good way to be able to let go and move on. I find humor helps me process my trauma. Like it really does. And also it brings you together with people. If you can all have a little laugh, you know, if you don't laugh, you're just gonna be in therapy forever. You know, you can't take everything so seriously.
It's so true, isn't it? I mean, someone said to me that the past is the past. We can't change it now. You can't change the fact you did the pukey in the pint glass. So it's up to you now, isn't it? You can either beat yourself up about it for the rest of your life or have a laugh about it and move on. And I think, yeah, laughter is clearly the best medicine. And we try and make people laugh on this podcast, sometimes even intentionally as well. So that's always good. And we've got another question from Sarah as well, who says, Abby, do you count your AF days and what really gives you the incentive to keep going?
I do count my AF days. I have an app on my phone. I know a lot of other people use it as well. It's called I Am Sober. And it's an app where you can track how many days you have been sober for. So every morning when I wake up, I get a notification that basically asks me to make a pledge, or tells me to make a pledge not to drink that day. And when I go on this app, it shows me a picture of me and my little niece. And when I first got sober, I downloaded this app and I had to write the reason why I was getting sober. And the reason is something like I see this every morning when I wake up. It says, like, I don't have a happy future with alcohol in my life. I don't control alcohol, it controls me. And I read that every day. And like just the physical like pledge to say, like, I will stay sober today, that like really helps me. And just having like a visual representation of like all the days I have been sober. Like, I know a lot of people do say, like, don't count your days, like whatever, but I find it helpful. And especially because it just reaffirms my sobriety in my mind. Like, sometimes I find it's quite easy to get comfortable in my sobriety. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm fine now. Like, I feel quite confident, and I forget why I'm sober. I forget why I'm doing this. So just reminding myself, counting my days, like, yeah, it reaffirms in my mind why I'm doing this.
Abby Feltham, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I was already a big fan of you and your Instagram and your TikTok account, but now to really understand the real you and the stories behind it and everything else, I'm absolutely in awe of everything that you've achieved. And also, we're delighted that you were here for our very first live recording with our studio audience as well. And on behalf of, you know, all of the listeners, the members, the audience here today, thank you so much for coming on Over the Influence. And we're delighted to be a part of this journey, and we can't wait to see what comes next.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on. It was really nice to meet you.
Let's keep in
touch. You're welcome. Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like the Vagina Monopod.
Hello and welcome to the Vagina Monopod. Woo! I'm an actress, Sasha Parkinson. You may know me best from shows like Mr. Selfridge or My Mad Fat Diary. I feel like I'm reeling off my IMDb.
CV. I am Molly Wright. I am also an actress. What have I done?
The A word.
The A word.
Apostasy.
Bit of Our Girl.
Our Girl.
Apostasy.
Forgot about that.
2 weeks of Our Girl.
A little backstory as to how the Vagina Monoblogs came about. As a person anyway, I've always been quite open, especially from about 16, 17. I just kind of then couldn't shut up about periods. I'd happily tell anyone I was on it. I didn't really shy away from talking about myself in that way. I was diagnosed with endometriosis in 2016. And then that kind of just spurred me on really to be more vocal on social media about menstrual health. We are not medical experts, but we will be getting
really
people.
Not.
No, we're really not. But we will be having the experts on. So if you have any questions you'd like answering, please get in touch and send them over to the Vagina Monoblogs on Instagram. We hope you join us for the next 10 episodes.
Thanks.
A more menstrual health discussion.
Woo!
Woo!
Vaginas!
The Vagina Monopod from Sound Rebel. Search for it now on your favourite podcast app.